Welcome to Around It About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. On today's show, I'm speaking with the author of a new novel set in North Georgia. It's a story about violence and racism during the civil rights era and how the effects of violence can linger for decades. The novel is Return to Taylor's Crossing. It's the second novel from Chattanooga native Janie Dempsey Watts. Two of the main characters in the story are a young African-American couple, Lola and Abednego. The story begins with them happy, falling in love. It's 1959 in North Georgia, and while they're falling in love, white residents of the town are growing uneasy as the civil rights movement ramps up. Eventually, the Ku Klux Klan attacks and nearly kills the male protagonist, Abednego. Lola, his girlfriend, is raped by a powerful, wealthy racist. The novel explores how these horrific acts of violence affect them for the rest of their lives. Abednego moves up north, and then the story fast forwards to the modern day, exploring what happens when he returns to Georgia and reconnects with longtime residents. Some of them seem to be in denial about what happened back then. It's also a story of redemption and healing. Lola becomes an artist and finds both success and solace in paintings she creates, paintings that depict North Georgia. It's fiction, but it's carefully researched and rich with detail. The author, Janie Dempsey Watts, says it was inspired by a real event. In this interview, she'll tell us about it. Janie Dempsey Watts, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So you write about this in the foreword to the novel. Why did you want to tell this story?
When I was a very little girl, after my grandfather passed away in 1954, we had a wonderful African-American farm worker that helped us ride the horses and boosted us up, and he also helped at our family's dairy. And what happened was, one morning, we lived up in Chattanooga, although we went to the farm a lot. I woke up, and my parents were very upset, and it seemed that some people had come and beaten him up, kidnapped him, and taken him away and told him never to return to the area.
Were they actually part of the Klan, or was this something less formal than that?
Well, it was always speculated they were part of the Klan, but no one ever said, and it's never been proven. But he had suggested it was from the Klan later. Apparently he returned later. I never saw him, but he did return and said it was the Klan.
You were pretty young then. How did your parents explain that to you as a young child?
They just said some bad people had come and they didn't like black people and they had taken him away. And we were very angry. I mean, they were very angry and I was very angry because he helped us get on the horse and he took care of the horses. So it took away an important and valuable person in my life and in the life of the farm. And sometime within the next year after this happened, the dairy had to be closed, which is my grandmother's income. So naturally, we weren't happy at all. And also, my parents did not think it was right that people would come and attack people just because they happened to be of a different skin color.
And your story is about North Georgia in 1959, the civil rights movement, the Klan, tensions between white and black residents. As you said, you were there for some of this, but what kind of research did you do writing this story? Because obviously you couldn't just rely on your own memories to write a story like this.
Well, the seed for the story started with a short story I wrote with what I know, which was my experiences riding horses. And I made a friendship between a black girl and a white girl, young girls, and they had a love of horses in a small rural community, very similar to this. But of course, that would bring attention to the people, even then, if an older person might see it. So something bad would happen. And I wrote that story, and it was published in an anthology in 2011. Well, when I got to thinking about the book was going to just be about these two girls, but I decided that there was more to it, that what would have happened to this particular man that I knew as a child if this had happened to him? How might it change his life? So I was going to write his story, and I thought that was good. But then I thought, well, what if there was a romantic interest? What if he had a girlfriend and she was affected by it? And then I thought, well, what else might happen? It was kind of the what if spinning and getting bigger and bigger like a web. But each piece took me to another area of research. I wanted to know what would have happened to the woman in the story. And I decided when she went to Florida, she would hook up with a group of people called the Highwaymen Artists. Now, I don't say it in the book, but there actually are a group of artists called the Highwaymen Artists that were Black artists that sold paintings alongside the road in the 50s and 60s. And in the late 1990s, they were recognized and are in the Florida Hall of Fame for artists now. And their paintings are very valuable. But she goes down there and joins with this group of people and learns to paint. And it turns, the experience that she has turns into positive. It motivates her to do something different than she might have had she stayed there. Whereas the man in the character, who's named Abednego, his life is affected more negatively by the event. So what I was trying to show is how different people are affected by one event. It's the story is told in actually six different points of view. Three are white and three are black. And then there's a brief chapter where Zyla Elmwood, who was in my first book, is there. So she's actually number four, but that's such a brief appearance by Zyla.
We're talking to Janie Dempsey Watts about her new novel, Return to Taylor's Crossing. Trying to classify what the novel is, it's Southern literature, but beyond that, it's a bit difficult to classify. As you were saying, it's a love story in some ways. They're the two protagonists who are in love, but then because the Klan beats up and almost kills this man and the woman is raped by her white boss, they're torn apart and they go their separate ways. How would you classify this? In one way, it sounds really grim when you describe it like that, but it's not, you know, it's not just totally grim throughout.
Well, I would classify it as literary fiction with elements of historical fiction, although historical fiction is technically, I believe, 50 years before, and this is just right on the line of historical fiction. But then later, and not to give the whole, do a spoiler here, that the characters will come back to Taylor's Crossing. And there is redemption at the as the story continues. Also, there are elements of humor, particularly between the young couple when they're falling in love. And Abednego has a good sense of humor, especially later in the book. So there are lighter moments as well. But I think it's an important message. And I think it's a story that will keep people reading. I don't think they'll want to put it down after at least the third chapter. That's what I've been told.
It's interesting because you were saying it's set in these two different time periods. A lot of it takes place in the 1950s, the civil rights era, and then the rest of it takes place in the modern era. And we see when Abednego returns to this area, how it's changed, how this racism has affected him personally. And I think what's really interesting is when he returns, the white characters who still live in this town have not exactly forgotten, but have kind of buried this history. Was that something that you experienced personally as someone who's lived in this area, who's gone away, who's come back, that a lot of people have, if not forgotten, then are just kind of no longer willing to discuss some of the things that happened in this area, some of the true things that happened?
That's absolutely true, Mike. There's actually a book called The New Mind of the South by Tracy Thompson, and I read this during my research, which was extensive, and I found out that there's a whole history called the shadow history. So white people were interviewed in places like suburbs of Atlanta, and they thought everything was just peachy back in the day in the civil rights era. While a mile or two away, somebody might be lynched that was African-American. They didn't even know about it. And I got really angry when I read this, and it sort of fueled what I thought had been going on. We knew about this, and my family was very candid and open about these things and talked about them at the breakfast and dinner table, but not a lot of people did. I think that it was easier to look away. But I think it's important history that people need to know so that we won't keep repeating it.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Janie Dempsey Watts about her new novel, Return to Taylor's Crossing. It's about the lingering effects of racism and violence in North Georgia, set in both the 1950s and in the modern era. And you're white. And when a white author publishes a story about racism, a story written from the point of view of characters of color, there are always questions about authenticity and appropriateness. Some readers and critics are going to wonder if a white author can really truly understand what it's like to be a victim of racism. Some critics will say, you know, this is cultural appropriation. This isn't your story, so why are you telling it? What were your thoughts on that as you were writing this novel?
I was very fearful about people thinking that way, and I was at the Southern Literature Conference, which, by the way, is a wonderful resource for local writers. And there was a panel about writing about characters with different cultural backgrounds. And Rita Dove was on it, who is a famous poet. And I grabbed her in the hallway at the Tivoli Theater and out in the lobby, actually. And I said, can you tell me something that will help me be able to write this story? I feel I have to write this story. And she said, Janie, as long as you find something in the character with which you can be empathetic. And that carried me through the whole journey of writing this. I kept thinking, how would I feel? The other thing is I do have three African-American characters and then three white, and I did that to give balance to the story, so I would show both sides. And I also had two friends of mine that are black take a look at a lot of the manuscript, actually three, to give me their input, and none of them had any problems with it. I wanted to make sure that the language was correct, and I studied something called African-American Vernacular English to make sure the lingo came out correctly and was authentic for a person of that time that would be speaking, you know, in a different dialect, so to speak. And I do worry about that, but I don't think I can have that stop me from writing a story because it has to be told. And perhaps there's other ones that are just as good written by a black person. You know, I did read a lot of different books myself. I would love to know what that is, and I would recommend those as well. Just have a variety of books on the topic. Never enough.
This is your second novel, both set in this fictitious North Georgia town, Taylor's Ridge. What are you working on next? Are you going to keep setting things in this place you've invented?
Well, I have a book of short stories I hope to get out in 2016 that's from actually stories from California, the South, and from Europe. But as far as the next novel, I do have one idea set in the same area, and I have a second one brewing that's a little lighter. I don't know yet. I haven't quite decided. Because this one, I just got it out the door. It came out at the end of October and the Kindle edition in November. So a lot of the marketing time takes up a lot of the writing time. That's what happens.
Is there anything else you want to tell the listeners?
I would hope that they would take a look at the book and try to see if they can relate to it. And I would love to hear their feedback. I have a website, www.janiewatts.com. And if they have experiences, I would love to hear about that as well, because I think we will all learn more by sharing what we've been through and trying, again, as I said, not to repeat these experiences, because today we have so much violence going on and we need to see how it affects people's lives. And I wanted to say one more thing. I thought of it like, you know, when you take a pool shot and you have the balls in the triangle and then you pull off the frame and you shoot the ball, the cue ball, and it smashes into them and each ball rolls in a different direction. Well, that's what I was trying to do with each character. I wanted to show how this one event smashed into their lives and projected them in different directions over a course of a lifetime, really.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Janie Dempsey Watts. We were talking about her novel, Return to Taylor's Crossing. It's about racism and violence in North Georgia in the civil rights era. A man is nearly killed and run out of town by the Ku Klux Klan. Also, his true love is attacked and raped by a Klan leader. The experience affects both him and her and others for decades. You can find more information about Janie Dempsey Watts at her website, janiewatts.com. That's JanieWatts.com. You're listening to Around and About. I'm Michael Edward Miller.